Hey y'all, it's Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. I'm a board-certified gynecologist, a clinical assistant professor of OBGYN at Northwestern Feinberg School of Medicine, and owner of a private practice for almost a decade that specializes in menopause and sexual medicine. I'm a South Asian American Muslim woman who is here to empower, educate, and help you advocate for health issues that have been stigmatized, shamed, and perhaps even prevented you from living your best life. I'm better than your best girlfriend and more open than most of your doctors. I'm here to educate so you can advocate. Welcome to Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Let's go. Hey, y'all. It's me, Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Guess what? Laurie Mintz, Becoming Clitorate. That's who I just spoke to. And it's a good one, guys. We're talking about orgasm equality. What does the sex therapist do? What are techniques to improve orgasm? All this stuff. So you guys want to stay tuned to this one. It's going to be good. So please join me in my podcast with Dr. Laurie Mintz. She is a sex therapist and a psychologist and a really world-renowned speaker as well. So you're going to enjoy this. And her last book was Becoming Clitorate, Why Orgasm Equality Matters and How to Get It. I would recommend getting this book ASAP. So please join me. Thanks. Hey, y'all. It's me, Dr. Samina Rahman, Gyno Girl. I'm so excited to be here today. I'm fangirling right now because we have the great Dr. Laurie Mintz here. And I know that those of you who are in sexual medicine or sexual education at all know her and her amazing book, Becoming Clitorate. So Dr. Laurie Mintz is an Emeritus Professor at the University of Florida. She teaches human sexuality to hundreds of undergraduates a year. She's published over 60 scholarly works and authored two popular books, Becoming Clitorate, Why Orgasm Equality Matters and How to Get It, and A Tired Woman's Guide to Passionate Sex. She's a licensed psychologist and certified sex therapist in private practice and a fellow of the American Psychological Association, indicating her work has had a positive national influence on the field of psychology. In 2023, she was named one of the Forbes 50 over 50 women innovators. Amazing. I love it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Laurie, for being here today. I'm so excited. We met last year at the International Society for the Study of Women's Sexual Health Fall Course, ISHWISH, which I talk about a lot on this channel. So people are like, here she goes again about ISHWISH. But yeah, we met on ISHWISH last year and I think you found a home there, just like I always talk about finding a home at ISHWISH. So
I really did. Yeah, it really felt like an integrative. There were psychologists, there were physicians of all types, you know, not just gynecologists, like urologists, psychiatrists, and there were pelvic floor physical therapists. It was like everybody who we need to work together for women's sexual health.
Right, because we always talk about it's a biopsychosocial approach. So we need all disciplines that address these areas involved. And I think that's the best way to get treated, actually, and to get more research done, too. So well, we're going to talk a lot about what, you know, your book and everything. But I want to just like ask you how you came to be a sex therapist, because, you know, I send my patients obviously to sex therapists, you know, as part of the multidisciplinary care. And, you know, people always get in their head like Masters and Johns, like what the sex therapy is. Like, what is she going to watch me have sex? Like, what is it?
Oh,
about?
No. Not doing that.
But I mean, in my first podcast, I told my story about how I kind of came to sexual medicine because of the need from patients and my own personal journeys and everything. Like, tell me, like, if you are comfortable saying, like, what brought you into the world of sex therapy and sexual medicine?
Completely comfortable saying. And I went to grad school, and like most psychologists, they never even mention sex. Mm-hmm. Never.
No.
And so I was out for many years, and I mostly was working, both teaching in a PhD program and also in private practice. And it started with my own personal journey. I had two young kids, you know, a job and a half, and a lot of stress.
Right.
And all of a sudden, my sex drive went poof out the window. And tanked. I thought, yeah, just totally tanked. And I started talking to my friends about this. And they all said, oh, me too. Me too.
Yeah.
Me too.
Right.
And I thought, I know how important sex is to relationship and life satisfaction. I had that base knowledge, which mm-hmm. we know from the research. Mm-hmm. And I thought there must be solutions out there in the scientific literature for diminished desire. So I did a deep dive, and indeed there were, but it was so much information that the lay public didn't know about.
Right.
So I started talking to my friends about it, using the techniques I found.
Yeah.
And it worked, right?
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
This stuff works.
It works.
And yeah. So I thought, this is really crazy that there's this whole body of literature that the lay public doesn't know about. And I thought, I'm going to write a book about this. And that was my first book, A Tired Woman's Guide to Passionate Sex.
Yeah.
And then when it came out, like, the scientist in me panicked. I was like, what if I wrote something that's not helpful? So I was in an academic institution, so I could ask some people,
yeah.
do a randomized clinical trial on my book. Because yeah. I couldn't do it, right? Because of, yeah. you know,
yeah.
conflict of interest.
Right.
Found out the book was helpful. Found out there's a whole world out there of the efficacy of self-help.
Nice.
And that just sort of got me going. And I started learning more and more, got certified, started teaching a graduate class mm-hmm. in sex therapy. Then I had the opportunity to move to the University of Florida, where I teach this undergrad class, which is just a passion for me.
I bet you love it. Oh my God, the college students are the best.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. They're, I tell my students that it's as much about learning as it is unlearning.
Yeah.
But the second or third year I taught the class, I taught about the orgasm gap, and the class came to life.
Yeah.
They told me about their pain. So many young women in the class revealed they'd never orgasm. They thought they were broken.
Right.
And so I started sort of teaching the class towards female orgasm and empowerment. Mm-hmm. And I would get notes from students like, thanks to your class, I'm orgasmic. Thanks to your class, my girlfriend's orgasmic.
Right.
And hence, that's when I thought, I want to put this out in the world and
yes.
not just in my classroom.
Yes.
And that's when I wrote Becoming Clitorate.
Amazing. Yes. Because we all know that once people have the right material and they're educated, then they can advocate for themselves and help themselves. And we know there's that direct correlation. My whole shtick here is like, I'm here to educate so you can advocate. And I think that's what we all do in this field, that there's just so much lacking in our educational system, right? You get a pre-puberty talk when you're 10 years old. And then maybe a sex talk in high school, and that's it. And probably not a talk from, if you grow up like me, you never had a talk from your family. And so.
Yeah. And a lot of my students, they never even have proper sex ed in school.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the boys go in one room and they do learn about ejaculation, right?
Right.
And the girls go in another room and they learn about their periods. Those are very different things.
Exactly. You know? You're going to be in pain once a month and, you know, like bleeding like a, you know, sieve, and you're going to just like feel good after you take on
it. Exactly.
Right. No, it's true. And that's why I'm so passionate also about talking about perimenopause, because I feel like we get all these talks and then when women hit perimenopause, they're like, WTF, nobody told me this was going to happen to my body. And so I think that's, yeah, I always say if you have puberty talks, you should have peri talks. Like, so I have a 30-year-old in my office. I start giving her a heads up and she's like, why are you telling me? And then sometimes my patients are like, oh, I'm so glad you actually even told me, because it's important.
Yeah.
But let's talk about the orgasm gap. I mean, you know, you give some great statistics in your book, and I know you've talked about this many times in many areas, but let's talk about what the orgasm gap is and who has orgasms, who doesn't. What is it? Is it vaginal? Is it clitoral? Let's do it.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the orgasm gap is the finding, right, in the scientific literature that when cisgender men, so men who are assigned a sex of male at birth, still mm-hmm. identify as men, and I'm going to just use the word men broadly from now on,
right.
get it on with cisgender women, I'll use the word women more broadly, the men are having way more orgasms than the women. Just to drop a few striking statistics, in one study, they asked people, how often do you orgasm always during sex? 39% of women versus 91% of men.
Whoa. It's like, what
now,
the
that
hell?
Was an older study, yeah. and it kind of kicked off the whole field.
Right.
But we now know that the gap is huge in Absolutely. Hookup sex. Mm-hmm. It gets smaller in subsequent hookups, friends with benefits, smallest in relationship sex, mm-hmm. but it never closes altogether. Women are still having way fewer orgasms than men. And now many people will say, oh, women's orgasms are difficult or elusive, and it's biology. But two other gaps tell us that's not true.
Right.
First, when women pleasure themselves, 95% reach orgasm easily and with minutes. We know our bodies.
Yes, we know
what to do.
Right.
And the gap is way bigger for when women have sex with men. Women who have sex with women have way more orgasms than women who have sex with men. There was one study that just blew my mind. Mm-hmm. And this really says it's not our bodies. It's what we're doing in heterosexual sex. These were bisexual women who hooked up with both women and men. So same woman, same body. Mm-hmm. When they hooked up with women, they said they orgasmed the first time 64% of the time.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty
with good. Men, 7% of the time.
We got the orgasm gap. We got the pay gap. We got the research gap. We got a lot of gaps, but
we got a lot of gaps. Yeah. So we know it's not our bodies. It's the way we do heterosexual sex.
Right. And I know that with all of that, we talk about the clitoral orgasm versus the internal vaginal orgasm. So, you know, in the literature, we've changed, you know, people talk, well, and the G-spot is so elusive. And, you know, now we've reframed it to talk about it as a G-zone, like the area around the clitoris, around the periurethral glands, that whole area. And of course, the anterior vaginal wall. But a lot of people say, oh, it's because the G-spot's so elusive that we can't get it. And so that's why people don't have vaginal penetrative orgasms. But I know there's a good statistic about that as well as versus clitoral orgasm.
Yeah. So, you know, the clitoris, as you well know, is it's analogous to the penis.
Right.
The vagina is not analogous to the penis.
Right.
And so, you know, women... it depends on how you ask the question in the study, but only 4 to 18% of women orgasm from vaginal penetration alone without clitoral stimulation. And the rest either need clitoral stimulation combined, you know, external clitoral stimulation, vulva stimulation, or just vulva stimulation alone.
Right.
But we often don't get this. And even think about the words we use, right? We use the word sex and intercourse as if they're one and the same.
Right.
We use the word foreplay as if it was just an unimportant lead up to this main event. And by doing that, we're prioritizing the act, revolving the whole thing around the act that gives men orgasms, not women. I'm fond of saying that if the tables were turned, we would call foreplay sex and intercourse post-play.
Yeah.
But I'm not suggesting we turn the tables, but I think the way to close the orgasm gap is to consider both clitoral stimulation and penetration equally sex.
Right. Agreed.
And so it's really about how we're going about sex, because if you, and this, another stat that I love, if you ask women how they pleasure themselves, less than 2% do so exclusively by putting something in their vagina.
Yeah.
So where's the disconnect, right?
Exactly.
I mean, so if that, you know,
just using a vibrator against the clitoris most of the time, you know?
Right. So we need to help women get the same stimulation with a partner as they get alone.
Yes, absolutely. Totally agree. And I think in your book, you kind of talk about the different, you know, your clinical scenarios. I think you were talking about how important it is to know and to communicate, right? Because there are some examples you give about someone who had great sex with one partner because that partner was impotent or, you know, or had erectile dysfunction. Sorry, I should use the correct terminology. had ED and then, you know, was giving the patient a lot of oral sex versus someone who was strictly having, and then her next partner, she was only having intercourse, so never had orgasms. And I think the patient didn't even realize the disconnect there because of the patient, the partner had ED, so that partner was giving more oral sex to her to make sure she was satisfied. No, so I think the whole story and in understanding like the partners, that's why the biopsychosocial approach is so important when it comes to orgasm dysfunction, right? Because we talk about all the types of sexual dysfunction that we treat in our offices. And the orgasm dysfunction, I think, has its own significance, because some people are like, you know, totally inorgasmic, or they don't even know what an orgasm is. And that distresses them, because everyone's talking about, you know, multiple orgasms, or, you know, all the pleasure that they have and how that sets them up to fail. I think in your book, you talk about sort of the culture that we have, the foundational culture in our societies around orgasm. Do you want to talk a little more about that?
Yeah. I mean, it's really, it's a little bit what I was saying. It's like, we make it out to be orgasms are elusive for women when they're not, when right. It's really just, we need a different type of stimulation. Look at the movies, right? Whether it's mainstream or porn.
Right.
What do you see? You see women having very little warm-up,
right.
No lube added, penetration, and she's having this incredible orgasm. And you and I both know, A, that's not going to happen. There's not going to be, for most women, there are some, but very few, that's not going to cause an orgasm. And for most women, that's going to cause pain. Because, you know, you need to be aroused before penetration. And so the whole culture is really sold women a lie.
Absolutely.
And so many women think they're broken. I've had more than one woman, maybe about 10, say, I thought my vagina was broken. You know, your vagina is not broken. Culture is broken.
Yes.
And so I think that's really so important to understand.
There is a, this is a side note. There was a, I'm trying to remember the show, but it's with Issa Rae. She's a Black comedian. And in her first or second episode, she has the song called Broken Pussy.
She talks really? About her.
It was like, nobody wants you because you have a broken pussy. It was supposed to be funny, but then I was like, that's not right. Like, we shouldn't be, you know, continuing to perpetuate this, you know, stereotype of that, like, that we're the ones that are the problem and we're the ones that are broken. We know that sex is a two-partner thing, whether or not it's a male partner or a female partner. And that's why even when there's like libido mismatch and all of these things, we have to address, both people have to be addressed in the process, right? So,
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And too many women think they're broken. And then because of that, they fake orgasm.
Right.
And then it perpetuates it. Like, faking orgasm is like applauding a 3-year-old who's having a tantrum. Like, good job. Good job. Keep doing that. You're reinforcing exactly what doesn't work for you.
Right. Right. No, you're right. That's the one, fake it till you make it doesn't work in this.
Exactly.
But I also think that, like, you know, most men don't, they'd be appalled if they knew that their partner was faking it, right? Like, most of them, you know, wish that we would communicate more. I think, especially when you're not in sort of the hookup culture, kind of more partnered with someone over a longer period of time, that, you know, they want to pleasure their partner. They want them to feel the same, like, joy and pleasure that they feel.
Yeah. And even the research shows that men feel accomplished. They feel good about themselves when their female partner orgasms. There's nothing wrong with that. We like to give our partner pleasure. But they've been duped. They think that the way they do that is by lasting long and thrusting hard. And so they're feeling pressure as well. And if everyone knew the truth, everyone could have more fun.
Right. No, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think in your book, you also talk about, there, like, one of the take-home points, maybe I read it, that this is something you say in some of your lectures, but it's like, communicate, masturbate, lubricate. Like, can you
I didn't say it in my book, I've come up with it since.
Okay,
masturbate, lubricate, vibrate, communicate.
Yes. Okay. That's what it
was. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. So that's your message to people, really, is that, like, these are the things that will really help us, you know, kind of close the orgasm gap, but also, you know, when both partners are having enjoyable sex, they're having a better, what do you call it? Partnership, a better relationship. And
absolutely.
I think that's been shown.
Absolutely. There's such a high correlation between being happy with your sex life, being happy in your relationship, and even people who are more sexually satisfied are just happier in life in
right.
general.
Right. And I think it contributes to their longevity. I think I've yes. written that as well. Yes. So I yes. think that's really important. Well, that's wonderful. Tell me a little bit about like your work as a sex therapist, because I think that's an important aspect. People get, you know, confused. What does a sex therapist do? Like, what does? And I know, you know, there's certain principles that are implemented. I know that, you know, there's certain techniques, sensate focus, some of that stuff that you may want to bring up, or you can let us know. But yeah, tell us what, like, when you see a patient, say I refer you a patient who, you know, has, I don't know, low desire or secondary anorgasmia or something like that. They used to orgasm and now they can't.
Yeah.
Tell me what that looks like for you.
So first of all, I make sure to that I'm glad you sent them to me, because if they came to me on their own, I'd send them to you were working,
right,
to make sure that there isn't something medical going on. And there can be, both for orgasms,
right.
We know, right?
Right.
You know, clitoral adhesions and, mm-hmm. you know, low desire, you know, hormone issues, all
right.
that. So
neurotransmitters, everything.
All that. So mm-hmm. I'd send them to you mm-hmm. if you didn't send them to me.
Right.
And then I would just do what a therapist would do with any other problem. I do what's called an assessment, like mm-hmm. when did this problem start? You know, how is it going? What have you tried to do to solve it? Like, I want to understand my client, and not just their sex.
Mm-hmm.
Sex is, people think sex therapists only talk about sex. And I talk about sex in the context of my client's entire life. Mm-hmm. If I've got a woman with low desire, I can't help her with the desire without understanding what's driving the low desire. Is mm-hmm. it because she's doing too much of the household and child rearing labor? Mm-hmm. Is it because she's stressed to the max? Is, mm-hmm. you know, is it, you know, so many things. So
right.
I get to know the person. And then there's an overarching model of treating all sexual concerns that I love.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called the Plissett model. And what it says is that you can treat sexual concerns with permission.
Mm-hmm.
So that's like permission from an expert to keep doing what you're doing. And I'll come back to some examples.
Mm-hmm.
Information, they call it limited information. I don't know why it's not so limited.
Right.
It's just information, limited to the problem, maybe.
Right.
Specific suggestion and intensive therapy.
Mm-hmm.
And in this model, it says that 80 to 90% of sexual problems can be solved without intensive therapy. That's if you catch it early, because if you don't, it spirals into other problems, you know, marriage,
right.
you know, resentment.
Right. Yep.
But example, permission. Here's a woman who says, you know, I'm never horny, but I have sex anyway. And then it's good when it gets going. It's like, oh, good. Keep doing that. That's not duty sex. If it's fun, keep doing that.
Right.
That's permission.
Or right.
The only time I can orgasm is when I touch my clitoris during intercourse. Great.
Do it. Yeah.
Keep doing that.
Right.
Then information is, so many people don't even have the right information. For example, that most women need clitoral stimulation, or that there's two types of desire and it's okay to use the second, which is I'm not horny,
right,
but I'm interested.
Right.
And then specific suggestions is really the mainstay. So for example, a woman who's never had an orgasm, one of the first suggestions is I'd give her a drawing of her vulva.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have her go home and find the parts. And then I would also give her directions to go home and masturbate with lube, with a vibrator.
Right.
Then I teach her to communicate with her partner as that bridge. So that's the mainstay of sex therapy, is all just, it's really a lot of education, encouragement,
right.
information. And then, of course, there are people who, they need more. They've had trauma,
mm-hmm.
and that's they're having a trauma response during sex,
right.
or they're so anxious that they can't turn off their brain,
yes.
during sex, and they're
yes.
worried about everything from how they look to the email they didn't return.
Right.
So those types of clients, or they're so angry at their spouse, you know,
yes.
that. So those kind of clients require deeper, more intensive therapy. But
mm-hmm.
sex therapy is really therapy
yeah.
with a focus on sex.
Right, Right. Absolutely. And because I think you're referring to like directed masturbation when you're talking about teaching them how to kind of masturbate on their own.
Yes. And we never touch clients. I want you to be, be very clear.
Yes.
I give clients homework at home.
Right.
They come back and tell me about them. I never, ever. And if a therapist ever asks like they want to, you got to run. Get out of that room. That is unethical.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Tell us about the concept of sensate focus and what that means.
Okay. So sensate focus is one of those specific suggestions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a couple exercise. And it's often used for couples who either have stopped having sexual encounters, mm-hmm. they're having terrible sexual encounters. Yeah. You take sex off the table, right? Mm-hmm. And you say, we're not going to do this. Mm-hmm. It's not allowed while mm-hmm. we work on this. And you give them homework that is gradually introducing sexual and sensual touch into their lives. And while they're doing this, you're teaching them mindfulness. So for example, when I do sensate focus with couples, the first homework I give is a head caress. They touch each other's face.
Okay.
They both, the giver and the receiver, focus on touch, mm-hmm. temperature, mm-hmm. pressure.
Mm-hmm.
And it teaches that touch. And then we might go on to above the waist. And then we might go on to below the waist. And we slowly get mm-hmm. more and more erotic. And it reintroduces mindful, erotic touch into a couple's life. To be honest, it is a mainstay mm-hmm. of treatment.
Mm-hmm.
And I use it, but I only use it with couples, of course. And
sure.
a lot of my clients are individuals. And, mm-hmm. you know, I always try to get the partner in since right. sex is a two-way street.
Sure.
But
yes.
sometimes the partner won't come. And I find that if that you can help somebody without having both of them there often.
Gotcha. I know we're kind of getting close to our time here, but I just wanted to ask you for the listeners, because I'm imagining, you know, we might have healthcare providers listening. We might have patients who are seeking help. Or, you know, just someone that wants to learn a little bit more about themselves and sex. What kind of sort of passing information do you want the listeners to know? Like, if there's something to encourage them to get help, or, you know, what is it that you would, your message to them?
My message is that sexual problems are solvable. There are scientifically supported techniques that we sex therapists know mm-hmm. to help you. So please don't be fearful of seeking help, because we know that the longer a problem goes on, it's harder. And mm-hmm. More than 50% of people have a sex problem at some point in their life. So there's no shame. Mm-hmm. You're not broken.
Right.
It's like, you know, it's like any other problem. Seek the resources you need. There is help out there, and sex should be for you, can be for you, a wonderful and affirming part of life. But when you're having sexual problems, it's a stressful part of life.
Absolutely.
And it doesn't need to be that way. There is help out there.
That's wonderful. My last guest, who was a pelvic floor therapist, Stephanie Prendergast, I think you might have met her at the conference. Also, that was her message too. She said, you know, these things are curable. Like, we have solutions. You just have to find the right way to advocate for yourself, and hopefully educating you here and with Dr. Mintz in her office or her website. You're going to see it in the show notes, all the great places you can find her information. What's to come? Pun intended.
Well, no, I'm just trying. one more thing that I want to say to the audience.
Okay, sure.
If that's okay.
Please.
Because of the Plissett model, permission, limited information, specific suggestions, that is a reason that self-help books are a mainstay in the sex
yes.
therapy field,
mm-hmm.
because you can give those in books. You can't mm-hmm. give intensive therapy. And there are books out there written by really good sex therapists on all these issues, on pain, on desire, on orgasm. So you could start there if you want and then find a sex therapist.
Absolutely.
Or So just don't be afraid to seek resources, but don't get them on TikTok by someone who says they are a sex therapist without credentials. There's some people causing harm.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, and I have to say, and I do have to say, like, this is one of the books I always recommend to all my patients when we talk about, when we're referring, especially I'm like, well, we need to get you into sex therapy. Why don't you start with someone, and this is one of my, on my list. And have it in my office.
You.
And I show them, like, you guys can look at this book and see.
Thank you.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, I wrote it to help people. So it really warms my heart when it does.
Yes. And it's very, very nicely, it's so easily readable and it's entertaining and it's fun. And so I think
thank you. Yeah. So what's next? You mean for me or the,
I
don't know. I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out. I've been doing a lot of speaking. I've been doing a lot more webinars where I educate other therapists about about talking to their clients about sex. I'm doing a lot of talks at college campuses. So I think I'm going to just continue to spread the word of sex positivity whenever and wherever I get a chance.
Wonderful. That's great. I love that. Because I think we're all on the same agenda here, which is really to educate and empower the people who are listening, the women who are, you know, oftentimes put aside because, you know, people are telling them everything's in their head or whatever the case may be. But, you know, there are solutions to problems in sexual dysfunction. And one of them is Dr. Lori Metz. She's a solution. For you as well, guys.
And there's like so many good sex therapists.
Yes.
And you know.
What is the website where you can find it?
That's what I was just going to say. There's two. Mm-hmm. One is ASECT, A-A-S-E-C-T. There's a find a provider link. And the other is STAR, the Society for Sex Therapy and Research. They also have a find a therapist. And I'm always like, I get people from all over the country asking me, like, do you have a opening? And a lot of times I don't, but I always tell them someone who does.
Wonderful.
So you can also email me directly.
Right. Wonderful. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on today. I can't wait to hear all the great things that transpire in the next couple of years for you, because I know that there's more to come. So
And for you too. And thank you for doing this podcast, for educating so many people.
Yeah, I'm hoping that it gets extended so that we can, you know, hit more people so more people can learn. But I really appreciate you being here. You know, we're here to educate so you could advocate for yourself. So thank you for joining me today on Gyno Girl Presents Sex, Drugs, and Hormones. Please like and subscribe to this channel and, you know, write us a review or what you want to hear. We'd love to hear it. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
If you have a second, please subscribe to this podcast. I'd love for you to be a follower and learn as much as you can about the things that we're going to talk about with all the people on our journey. Please review us on Apple or Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts. These reviews really help. Review us, comment, tell me what else you want to hear to get more information. My practice website is www.cgcchicago.com. My website for Gyno Girl is www.gynogirltv.com. My Instagram is Gyno Girl, so please follow me for some good content. Additionally, I have a YouTube channel, Gyno Girl TV, where I love to talk about all these things on YouTube. And please subscribe to my newsletter, Gyno Girl News, which will be available on my website. I will see you next time.